Hear ye, hear ye. This Honorable Appellate Court for the Second Judicial District is now in session. The Honorable Christopher M. Kennedy presiding. Your Honors, the only case on the docket this morning is 2-24-0703. Silverthorn Development Company, doing business as Silverthorn Home Builders and Illinois Corporation, for himself and other similarly situated class members, plaintiff appellant, the Sycamore Creek Homeowners Association and Illinois Not-for-Profit Corporation, Josh Hall and JRH Construction Corporation, defendants appellees. Arguing for the appellant, Mr. C. Nicholas Cronauer. Arguing for the appellee, Mr. Michael L. Reeses.
All right, Mr. Cronauer, you may proceed.
Thank you, Justice Kennedy. Good morning. May it please the court.
Morning.
Mr. Maxwell, Mr. Reese. As you all know, it's good to see you again. My name is Nicholas Cronauer, and I represent the appellant. Before we begin, I can get into what I've planned remarks, but are there any specific questions that I could answer for any of the justices to start us off? All right.
No, I think it'd be best for you to go ahead and frame your arguments.
Perfect. Thank you. Basically, in a nutshell, Justice Kennedy and Justice Shostak and Justice Kaplan, I think we have a situation with very heavy factual issues. You know, what was the intent? What was the target? Was there bad faith? Was there self-dealing? Essentially rendered as legal conclusions rather than issues of fact that should have gone to a trial. And I know the case, you know, people think, well, this is a lot of time spent on windows, but this is more about windows. Justices, this is about how the governance and integrity result when they're self-dealing from a board member. A board member used, this is Josh Hall, you know, the owner of JRH Construction, the HOA authority to eliminate a competitor. This is a heavy factual record in this case. These were alleged, and yet, despite these allegations, the trial court treated these factual issues as failing to state a claim, taking the issue from the jury. Obviously, this was dismissed on a 2615 dismissal, three counts, which we're going to go over. Count two for tortious interference with a business expectancy, count five for civil conspiracy, and count six for concert of action. As detailed in the brief, which I'm not going to belabor because I know you justices did the work to review everything, we allege that the defendants, Sycamore Creek, Josh Hall, and his construction company, conspired to amend the HOA's architectural rules in violation of the governing documents. And that's the most important part of this case, right? There's bylaws in effect that talk about encouraging energy efficiency, right? And it's more than just encouraging. The language is it's something that needs to be strived for, needs to be pursued. And the factual record that was developed is that was never a concern by anyone related to the HOA, to Josh Hall, when they put this window ban in effect, which actually required less efficient windows to be used for all homes in this subdivision, despite prior homes being approved by Josh Hall before he was a competitor, approving these more efficient vinyl windows. And, you know, ultimately, you know, that the result is alleged and is well known. There's over $900,000 in lost income to this builder because of these windows. And I think
Council, can I ask you a question? Can you have a conspiracy between a principal and an agent?
So in this situation, yes. So the case is relied upon.
How's that?
So here's the problem. And you've got an agent of the HOA, who's Josh Hall, and even agent of JRH, right? So you have, it's almost like for Christians, like the Holy Trinity, right? You've got the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. You've got JRH. You've got the HOA and you've got Josh Hall. He's wearing multiple hats, but those, you know, legally are distinct entities, which as a matter of law can create a conspiracy. Now, the case cited by the defense is just principal agent. There's no other third party, right? That's why this case is distinguishable and why it's important that JRH is named in the complaint. JRH is a separate legal entity, and the actions to JRH create the conspiracy. The fact that there's this Josh Hall going back and forth, right? That's the evidence of the self-dealing. That's the problem. That's the conspiracy. And as a matter of law, absolutely, given that JRH is a separate legal entity. And ultimately, we're going to ask that the court reverse or remand for further proceedings because there are issues of fact for these three counts. So now at this point, I'll start going over the counts we're here for today. Count two is tortious interference with a business expectancy. The trial court erred in dismissing this because, you know, all the elements here were pled. Again, 615, look at the elements, where the inferences, take the allegations as true. Clearly, this isn't met. We've got expectancy of third-party buyers, right? We have Josh Hall looking at contracts, looking at plans for buyers, right, that eventually get disproved. So there's the four.
What third parties were impacted for the tortious interference?
You say which four parties?
Which third parties were impacted for the tortious interference?
So good question, Justice. The third parties are the home buyers. The whole issue in this case is they're, you know, the defense, well, they're targeting the builder, not the home buyer. The problem is they are controlling the builder who is targeting the home buyer. The home buyer wants these vinyl windows, right? We've got four consumers listed in the complaint. They want these vinyl windows. The HOA says, sorry, there's a new rule. The builder can't build them. So those plans get denied. So the third party is clearly targeted to be the buyers of the homes in Sycamore Creek. So I mean, another analogy, just trying to think through this last night, you know, how to explain this. And it's, again, so say you have a family, a very wealthy family, and there's a trust fund, right? One of the kids does something to make the patriarch or the matriarch upset, right? So they don't deposit money in the trust account. Are they targeting the trust? Are they targeting the kids? At the end of the day, you're targeting the homeowners because that's who's buying the homes by telling them you can't buy these windows. And I think it's important to point out, and this is in the record, it's not really briefed that well, but it's in the trial court record. I mean, these windows, the price difference is significant. We're talking $40,000, $50,000. So, you know, it's not like we're just talking a couple thousand dollars here or there. These aluminum clad windows that are inefficient are also way more expensive.
Now, let me ask you another question. Mr. Reeses argued in the brief, were the architectural guidelines intentional and justified acts directed at your potential customers? Isn't that the question?
I think that's a question of fact, right? I don't think that can be construed against my client at a 615 stage. You know, if I'm them, can you argue that? Yes, but again, that's an argument requiring some type of factual determination, which is not suitable for 615.
But can't you get a customer who would buy the other windows? I mean, this isn't like stopping your client completely. If they find customers who buy the other windows, they could still build with those windows, can't they?
It's the market for those windows is extremely small. It's not their model. Could a customer come to them and say, we want those windows? They could, but that's very rare, very common because these are very expensive windows. And the windows they offer in their homes, I mean, they build lots of homes, are the vinyl windows.
So then they can build those homes with the vinyl windows somewhere other than Sycamore Creek.
Again, it depends on the subdivision, depends on the HOA. Everyone's got their different rules, their different building specs. So it depends. But they can't build them in Sycamore Creek where they own the lots, where they used to build with these vinyl windows until they were competing against Josh Hall, which I think is also a differentiator. What's important in this case is you have a builder who wasn't building and approving these plans and then decided he was going to build homes with different, more expensive, less efficient windows. And so when that came about, you know, took actions to then, in essence, ice out Silverthorne by precluding these windows that they put in their home. You know, I think it's important to kind of dovetail off what you said, Judge Shostak, is the bylaws, right? I mean, just because, sorry, Justice, you're talking, but I don't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Before you go to the bylaws, distinguish the Continental Mobile telephone case where the court ruled that rate changes weren't directed at plaintiffs' customers. Isn't that this case? I mean, can you distinguish that?
No, absolutely. Because again, you're dealing with regulatory action, which is different from a private entity who knows what's being built in the subdivision and then goes out and builds in the subdivision, the very windows that are only allowed and barring other windows that were allowed. That's totally different from Continental, where there's express contractual authority. And I think you got to remember, again, you know, the bylaws are like the Constitution. So in Continental, I mean, if there's nothing regulating the government body or the entity, right, they have the ability to do that. But we have the bylaws here, which require energy efficiency. And that is kind of the distinction of all these cases, right? If these bylaws weren't here, You know, we have a different case, different argument, different situation, but you have these bylaws.
Before we talk about that too, we talk about the difference between, and you talk between impacting your clients. There's a difference between whether it impacts them or whether it is directed at them. Isn't that correct? So, I mean, is I don't think impact and directed are one and the same when you're talking about this type of situation. When you're talking about the tortious interference.
But the again, that's a factual issue, right? I think to try to construe that now is the hard part for the court. You know, maybe summary judgment, maybe at trial you can make that argument. But to just say now that they were impacted but not directed, I think it's an issue of fact. I think it defies the facts. Again, it goes back to, you know, how many homes did they build with these vinyl windows before Josh Hall was on the board? You know, five. Josh Hall started building homes. All of a sudden, he's in charge of the board. And this window rule gets passed, which explicitly benefits him. So, you know, impact, was it directed? There's clearly issues of fact that support that at this stage, that makes 615, you know, the wrong vehicle to, I think, dispose of this case at this juncture. And the other thing, too, that is in the record, and the briefs talk about this very briefly, is you've got an individual who's not only on the review committee, he's making exceptions for his own builds, right? Which just shows that these rules are not about innocuous impact. It's clearly a mechanism to let him build what he wants and ice out Silverthorne or any other developer. You know, just because they make a big deal about, well, these other developers that follow the same rules, well, the other developers weren't building there, right? So he's
not the only one on the board. Can't it be argued that they just wanted it to aesthetically to look better with these other windows versus vinyl windows?
This is the problem. If they would have passed a rule that took in efficiency, you know, applied an R value, something objective, again, we were in a totally different case. I think the case is probably harder to pursue, but this just whole, it's got to be aluminum clad. Efficiency doesn't matter. R value doesn't matter. That's where the problem comes in. And it becomes very subjective and allows this self-dealing, which should not occur. And the law.
It's more aesthetics. It's more aesthetics, isn't it? Versus efficiency.
That's the reason they passed it. Correct. That, you know, that's in the record that the efficiency wasn't considered, wasn't thought about, didn't matter, which is the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, unlike Continental, unlike DuPage, again, you don't have this bylaw saying you need to consider this, and they do the exact opposite or admit that they don't even consider that one way, shape, or form. And that's the problem. You know, the civil conspiracy we kind of talked about, obviously, civil conspiracy rises and falls with the underlying tort, which is the interference with the business expectancy, which, again, for the reason we've talked about, clearly the elements at this stage have been met. Unless your honors have any other questions, I don't have anything else for my argument at this time, and reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Justice McLaren, do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. It's been my experience that in some of these subdivisions that the developer controls the board or the homeowners association and doesn't relinquish control over it until such time as usually a percentage, which can be arbitrary insofar as transfers of title to third parties, would then indicate that the developer person who either builds on his own or her own or controls the general contractor. And so where was this particular subdivision insofar as who was in control of the homeowners association at the time these windows were chosen?
It would have been Josh Hall's on the board and other board members that were deposed. Who their specific names were, I can't recite that to you. I can provide that to you, but it was, you know, homeowners in the community. This is a development. It's been around, I think, since probably 08. It wasn't something that Silverthorne, you know, developed from the ground up. They basically bought a bunch of lots, bought them, you know, from when lots got cheaper back in the late 2010s. And was building houses kind of on a as lot basis where they could pick up lots at the right price point. So yeah, some subdivisions, the developer sets it up, they control it until they get farther along, and then they kind of release control. But that was not really the case in this situation.
It sounds like the ins got an advantage and the outs got a disadvantage. How is that illegal?
Again, the problem is it's illegal because it's self-dealing. There's a fiduciary duty when you're on the board to do what's best for the subdivision, not what's best for JRH Construction or Josh Hall. And again, the problem is, at the end of the day, there's this bylaw, right? So the board can't just ignore its bylaws. The bylaws are, as I've said, the case law is clear on this. It's a constitution. It's the constitution of the HOA, right? So, another analogy, it'd be like a state trying to say, well, we don't believe in free speech in this state. Well, our constitution says otherwise. The bylaws dictate what the board can or can't do. And in this situation, it requires they consider energy efficiency, which they admitted in deposition was never a thought, never consideration. And that's why, Your Honor, it's totally tortious and illegal. There's lawful competition, there's unlawful competition, and to come on the board and then pass laws that favor one builder to the detriment of all others, clearly is not fair competition under any legal standard.
Well, using your analogy relative to freedom of speech, when does this right attach? Does it attach before or after the developer and the board relinquish or keep control of the bylaws and the subdivision and the construction of the subdivision?
It's when the bylaws would be passed, adopted, ratified. The bylaws control whether the developer owns all the lots, whether some rich land investor owns all the lots. The bylaws control. Now, I'm not saying they can't go in and change the bylaws, right? But that's not this case. It hasn't been done. And if the bylaws haven't been changed, it's how the bylaws read. They have to be complied with, regardless if someone owns 100 lots, 100% of lots, or owns, 52% of lots or 48% of
Okay.
lots.
Reference it in the bylaws where the exercise of discretion relative to the choice of windows is limited, proscribed, defined, affected. How or where in the bylaws do you or does your client have some sort of proprietary right in having his more efficient windows chosen over different windows, be they more aesthetic or less aesthetic or whatever?
And so that therein lies the problem is the windows were banned. More vinyl windows, the testimony is vinyl windows are more efficient, right? They're better insulated. Just think of housing, right? You don't have aluminum houses, you don't have metal houses because they're very poor conductors of warmth, of heat. So again, to go back to kind of what I was mentioning to Justice Shostak, if they passed a resolution that windows have to meet this R value, they have to meet this efficiency standard, right? That's a different analysis. But to say we are going to require energy efficiency be a consideration, and then you pass a law that more efficient windows can't be used, that clearly violates the bylaws and the bylaws control.
So the bylaws mention R factors insofar as the choice of windows.
No, that's the problem. They don't mention anything. They say you're going to, they want people to live in a community with energy efficiency, right? They want energy efficient homes. If they would have passed a resolution, showing some type of objective measure of what's efficient, what's inefficient, then I think your argument,
It's not my argument, it's my inquiry. I'm asking questions.
sorry, Justice.
Yeah.
Then I think that goes more to your question, right? But the problem is they have a subjective standard that is on this record admitted to be less efficient, less economical than these vinyl windows. And that therein lies a problem because it's a resolution that defies the bylaws, which the law does not allow.
I have no further questions.
Right, Justice Shostak, no. All right, thank you, counsel. You will have time on rebuttal. Mr. Reeses, you may begin your argument.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Mike Reeses, and I'm here today on behalf of the defendant's appellees. The court knows there are three claims at issue on appeal. Count two for tortious interference with business expectancy, count five for civil conspiracy, and count six for concert of action. We respectfully submit the trial court properly applied the law in the governing documents in granting defendants Section 2615 motion to dismiss. The trial court should be affirmed. Plaintiff's theory is that the guidelines conflict with the objectives of energy efficiency as set forth in the declarations. But the declaration does not mandate the most energy efficient materials to the exclusion of any other objective and purpose set forth in the declaration.
Did the declaration, Mr. Reeses, did the declaration ever set forth efficiency?
It talks about implementing energy efficient features, conducive materials that are conducive. It is to encourage the use of energy efficient features.
So it was in there previously.
Yes, it's one of several objectives and purposes that the Design Review Committee has to balance. But the objective regarding energy efficiency stops short of using mandatory language. It goes on to, quote, encourage, the lawyer quotes there, encourage the use of quality materials conducive to energy conservation. The use of the word encourage does not carry the same weight as require or mandate. Now, counsel talked about all of the different fact questions that he believes he's raised on appeal. Interpreting the declaration is a question of law. And that was properly raised on a 2615 motion. The declaration recognizes other purposes in addition to energy conservation. They include to ensure, quote, tasteful and consistent development, close quote, to guard against the use of unsuitable material, to encourage an attractive improvements, to provide for a subdivision of the, quote, highest quality and character, close quote. The declaration's repeated use of such words as attractive, tasteful, harmonious, and of the highest quality and character suggest that the objectives and purposes are aspirational as far as what is aesthetically pleasing, of the highest quality, energy efficient, and eco-friendly.
But Mr. Reeses, these restrictions were never in there prior. They came in there once Mr. Hall joined the board, correct?
That is correct as far as the architectural specifications. The declaration never changed. The guidelines that were passed appropriately by the Design Review Committee, that is what changed effective, I think it was April of 2018. Now, let's just assume for the sake of argument that plaintiff's vinyl windows were more conducive to energy conservation than fiberglass or aluminum clad windows. The declaration did not require the use of the most energy efficient materials. The Design Review Committee had the discretion to withhold approval for any reason deemed appropriate, including specifically aesthetics. If there's any objective that is placed above any other objective, I would argue it's aesthetics, because that's the one that is specifically mentioned as a basis for the Design Review Committee to either approve or withhold approval.
Mm-hmm.
Plaintiff's own pleadings raised the issue of aesthetics and what, quote, consumers tend to perceive as higher quality, close quote, windows or window cladding and frames. The design review committee's guidelines are not invalid when measured by the broad aspirational objectives of the declaration.
Well, Council, yeah. What about the five homes that had already been built with the vinyl windows?
Well, they were built before the specifications were changed. And, you know, as anyone who's ever lived in a planned development can tell you, sometimes when the members on the committee change, you get different priorities. Those five still have, they didn't have to change anything. They didn't have to change the windows. I mean, they were appropriate at the time. They were approved. They still have vinyl windows.
So, what about the argument that the change here was directed at the third party being the homeowners? The homeowners now are the ones restricted from purchasing these types of windows.
So the way to look at it is, if you look at what the declaration requires, it requires the lot owner, that is the home builder, to submit the architectural plans for approval. The resolution is directed at the lot owner, who is the home builder. It is not, the home buyer is a potential home buyer, but at that stage, the lot is owned by the builder, and that can be Silverthorne, or it could be Champion. But the point is that the action of the design review committee is directed at the plans, and the plans are submitted by the lot owner. So the guidelines are directed at the home builder, not the home buyer. And that is why this case looks more like Continental Mobile Telephone, where the rate change was directed at the plaintiff, not the plaintiff's customers, although admittedly the plaintiff's customers would be the ones who would have to pay the increased price. And what counsel's doing, or what he was trying to do, was he was trying to reframe this in terms of the impact, what the impact was, as opposed to what acts, intentional and unjustified, allegedly, were directed at the home builder, not the home buyer. So the impact, let's say counsel's right, that the utility bills are increased, right? Because they're not using vinyl windows. The impact is not the basis for the claim. Plaintiff essentially is just complaining that the guidelines interfere with the ability to build homes with vinyl windows. But the case law requires the plaintiff to plead something more, that the guidelines were intentional and unjustified acts directed at the customer. At most, what plaintiff alleged was a loss of business due to the impact of the guidelines, because its houses would be more expensive to build, as would be equally true of any home builder which wanted to use vinyl windows. Counsel made the statement that
Mr. Reeses, would yes. You have to allege actual malice under the business judgment in order to be successful as a plaintiff?
So that, as regards Mr. Hall and Sycamore Creek Homeowners Association, plaintiff would have to have well-pled facts to show that those acts were done with actual malice. And instead, all we got was a litany of legal conclusions and labels about Mr. Hall being selfish and self-dealing and really just being undue influence. No specific factual allegations. I don't have to tell you Illinois is a fact-free jurisdiction.
Right, but it does look a little bit it is a bit ironic that when he gets on the board, these types of things are changed, and they are changed basically in the benefit of his building company.
It would it would benefit any company that's using aluminum or fiberglass windows. There was never an allegation that Silverthorn was singled out as far as its homes being or architectural plans being rejected. Never made any such allegation as the court below recognized.
Mr. Reeses, were there ever any other builders, or are there other builders in Sycamore Creek that use fiberglass windows other than Silverthorn? Or not fiberglass, but the efficient windows that they use. Pardon?
I'm sorry, do you mean vinyl?
Vinyl.
Champion was, in fact, one of the emails that opposing counsel attached as Exhibit C to the Seventh Amendment complaint specifically identified that a Champion window was not approved as well. So it's not just Silverthorn. Talking for the moment about the civil conspiracy and the concert of action theories in counts 5 and count 6. So the court is aware that because the acts of an agent are considered to be the acts of the principal, there can be no conspiracy or concert of action between the principal and agent. That was one reason the trial court dismissed counts 5 and 6, because plaintiff could not satisfy the element requiring a combination between two or more persons when Hall's acts on the board of directors or the design review committee were attributable to Sycamore Creek Homeowners Association. Plaintiff put itself out of court. Now, plaintiff tries to plead around the two or more persons requirement by arguing that somehow Paul commingled his role as president of JRH Construction with his other role. Plaintiff is in effect arguing that while acting as an agent for two defendants, he was somehow conspiring with himself. He's the only one allegedly who's, you know, he's acting as an agent and he's acting for two different principals. Plaintiff did not show how JRH Construction combined with Sycamore Creek Homeowners Association or participated in the scheme to adopt the guideline, merely characterizing a combination of acts as a conspiracy is insufficient to withstand a motion to dismiss. But let's just suppose for the moment that we get beyond that element. The other problem is that for concert of action or conspiracy, you have to have a tortious act or a tortious result. What's the tort here? If, as we've argued, plaintiff did not adequately plead tortious interference, as he attempted in count 2, he certainly can't have a conspiracy or concert of action based on tortious interference if he can't satisfy the elements for tortious interference. And remember that plaintiff did not appeal the dismissal of count 4, which alleged breach of fiduciary duty. So that can't be the basis for a civil conspiracy or a concert of action. That claim is gone because it was never raised on appeal. If there are no further questions, and for all the reasons set forth in our brief, we ask you to affirm the dismissal of the action with prejudice.
Justice McLaren, do you have any questions?
No.
Hi, Justice Shostak.
Yes, I do. Counsel argues, many times throughout his argument here that you have these facts pled in the complaint and we're at a 2-6-15. Isn't this premature at this point? And shouldn't he be able to have an opportunity to put his facts into evidence?
Summing complaints. This case has been pending for 5 years. This isn't a 2-6-1-5 where right out of the box, we're making a motion. He went through multiple complaints. He did all of the discovery. The record contained thousands of pages because depositions were taken. He had a chance to develop the facts, to develop his claims. The main one, I think, is the tortious interference because the other two are pretty much tied, derivative of that. Couldn't do it, not because he wasn't given the opportunity, but because the declaration is broad, it's aspirational, and the interpretation of that legal document presented a question of law. If there are no further questions, we ask you to affirm for all the reasons set forth in our brief. And thank you for the opportunity to address you today.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Cronauer, your rebuttal.
Thank you, Justice Kennedy. I'll be brief. Just to start with, the argument's been raised throughout in this case. Well, it's just Silverthorne that's complaining about this. No one else is, but the law protects everyone equally. The fact others didn't necessarily sue or exercise their rights doesn't mean that Silverthorne doesn't have any. It's a red herring. It's irrelevant. It's like saying because some people didn't report a crime and while others stayed silent, the crime didn't occur. And that's just because Silverthorne spoke up because they have obviously a lot more money on the line than, say, Champion Builders. It makes sense why they would be the ones trying to fight this battle where others, business people, don't think it's cost effective. And it's irrelevant. It's a red herring to what my client's rights are. The other argument.
I have one question, Mr. Cronow. Could, and maybe I asked this before, but could your client on the five properties that he currently owns, could he build with the new guidelines?
I don't want to lawyer the question, but practically, legally, could he? Yes. Practically, no, because the clients don't want to pay $50,000 more for their house for these windows. That's the pragmatic problem we have in this case that the law needs to understand. He lost these sales, he lost these contracts because he said, okay, we'll build you this house with these windows. Here's the new price. The buyers walked. So
he still has the lot, so he could sell them to new buyers with the understanding that it's going to be, he'll just give them the new price. They won't know that it's 50,000 more. They'll just know they're getting this house with this price. Correct?
Again, legally he could, practically he can't, yeah. Because that is a higher threshold market. That's a higher buyer. That's not the type of customer that is necessarily buying these houses, if that makes sense.
Well, how much does the house cost, let's say?
I apologize.
Which is buying the windows.
The windows, based on the record, are about $50,000 more for these aluminum clad windows.
No, I understand that. But what dollar amount of house are we talking? 300, 400, 500, a million? I mean, what?
300 to 500. So that's a huge expense that at that level of home, most buyers aren't willing to pay. Therein lies the problem. And so, they want to argue that it's written to apply to everyone. But, again, that's a factual issue that the record, I think, undermines because it was conceived, timed, and implemented to destroy one competitor, that Silverthorne, who was building in that subdivision with those windows, and they knew about because they had to approve them, and they approved them before. There's the bylaws are clear. This whole the defense wants to pin their hat on encourage. The problem is encourage qualifies design features. When you read the whole thing, the objective is clear. It is to ensure high quality quality materials conducive to energy conservation for people to live in. That is clearly an express declaration of the bylaws. It has to be fulfilled, which gets into then the law of bylaws. And if there's a resolution that is contrary to a bylaw, a resolution cannot prevail. While there's no doubt, and the defense argues this throughout, the business judgment rule, there's a voluntarily association has discretion. It does not have discretion to countermand, ignore, or not try to implement its bylaws. Bylaws control, and they have to be followed. And when they don't, that's what the courts are for. But and that's why we're here. The other kind of undermining issue isn't it just competition? Well, the case law is pretty clear. There's lawful competition, there's unlawful competition, and a defendant such as JRH Construction must forbear other parties' pursuits of legitimate business goals, and they can't pursue illegitimate business means to pursue their own goals. Unfair competition is not privilege. It includes fraud, intimidation, malice, disparagement, or other unlawful conduct. Other unlawful conduct in this case, justice is tortious interference, which the elements have been pled, and the case should be vacated and remanded for further action consistent with that so that we can have at least summary judgment or a trial on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel Justice. McLaren, any questions?
No.
Mr. Shostak, any questions? All right, thank you very much, counsel, for both of your arguments. We will take the matter under consideration, issue a disposition in due course, and we will adjourn this session for the day. Thank you.
Thank you.